Hello, everyone. We are back. Full swing, sort of. I guess we're full swing. For Merlin's Monsters, and this is the behind-the-scenes podcast for Murphy, where we deep dive into episodes, interview the cast, and answer questions that you have about the show. I am joined today by the other three writers, Annie.
Hello.
Derek.
Hi.
And Drew.
Hello.
So welcome. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since we've all kind of been here and doing this, so we have a packed episode for you today. I was actually listening to, like, back, and I listened to, I think, our first Merlin's Monsters episode, and how we were all very excited to, like, talk about the stuff that's in the later half of the season, but we couldn't yet because the later half of the season didn't come out yet.
Yeah, I was, like, useless in that first episode.
Well, now you are useful.
Yes! Finally!
You're always useful.
It only took 3.5 years, but we finally
made it. We did
it. Today's episode will be about episodes 4 and 5, written by Drew and Annie, respectively.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
And I'm so excited because these are really awesome episodes. A lot happens in both of them. So, without further ado, episode 4, In the Woods Somewhere, was Drew's episode. And something I noticed is that Drew really likes writing these, like, preludes for his episodes. And I just think that's, like, so, it's so very much, like, in the style of him. That I know I'm like, you could give me Drew's episode and not put his name on it. And I'm like, this is a Drew episode. It's just like very like noticeable. And I just think that's like so cool. So that was something I noticed. And there's also 2 Dennis cameos in this episode. Scream.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The scream in the beginning is Dennis.
Yep.
Nobody tells me anything on this team.
Pretty sure we put it in the chat.
Yeah. So
why would you think that I look at the chat?
So the scream in the prelude is Dennis, and then the parting glass, the patrons in the pub who are singing the parting glass, that's all Dennis.
Yeah.
All of them are Dennis.
All of them are Dennis.
God damn. Yeah, he can do it all.
Yeah.
Denny den 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 den.
Someone should put a ring on that man's finger soon, or else
okay.
Too late. I already did.
Shit.
We are now in a different location. We are in Ireland, and we meet Elliot's family in this episode. So we're peeking into Elliot's world. And as I mentioned in a past episode, Elliot wasn't supposed to be as involved as he was. So this was like really kind of exciting and like kind of cool. So Drew, my first question is for you, was it exciting for you both as an actor and writer to discover more about Elliot?
Oh, yeah, easily. 100%. Well, because I'm sure a lot of people don't know this. I got the role of Elliot after I wrote the episode already. So, like, it was just very fun to sort of, like, really delve into Elliot's family. And I used my own family for plenty of inspiration as well. My family is very Irish. So it was just very fun to learn about him, learn about why he is such a strange man, but it's because he grew up around, you know, people that deviate from the norm, and that doesn't make him bad. It just makes him strange and exciting and interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was really cool to learn more about him, and I'm glad you also enjoyed that. So we also are introduced to the Doulahan in this episode, which adds a really, really spooky tone and does some literal soul sucking.
Yeah.
So that is cool and fun and good. And the Doulahan is voiced by Soren Correa, who does an excellent, excellent job. So next question is, so I hadn't heard of the Doulahan before this. So it was kind of really exciting because I think what I wanted to do with Murphy was talk about folktales that aren't like your typical, like, of course, like there's the Loch Ness Monster and there's werewolves and all that, but like what are like the other folktales that people are telling? So my question is the Doulahan like well known in other parts of the world, and what specifically drew you to it?
Well, I mean, the Doulahan is very primarily known in Ireland, funny enough. There's no concrete evidence of this, but it's speculated that when Washington Irving wrote The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, he used the Doolahan as inspiration for the Headless Horseman. Like he, I can't remember off the top of my head, like his family was from like from over there. And I believe he had a maid who was full Irish. So it's not like too out there to believe that he had heard of the Doolahan and wanted to write a story around it, which is funny because I heard, and most people in the United States have heard of the Headless Horseman and the Legend of Sleepy Hollow before they heard about the Doolahan. So it's like a weird flip-flop. but, I mean, what drew me to it, honestly, is I've come to find this out recently. I have a couple of favorite cryptids and mythological creatures. Werewolves, one of them. Vampires, another. Any specter on a horse? Yeah, that's up there, baby. Like,
it's the stamp.
Well, it truly is. Like the Doolahan, the Headless Horseman, the Knuckle of V. Like,
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, like pretty much any specter or spooky creature that's on a horse, I'm like, that is awesome. Tell me more. Like I think I remember hearing something about like a ghost rider, no relation to the motorcyclist, of like a old cowboy or something who was known as a ghost rider, and like he haunted mines or something like that. And I was like, that's awesome. Tell me more about that ghost story. So yeah, he was on a horse and he had a whip made out of a spine. I was like, that's pretty awesome.
That's kind of sick.
You don't really hear about weird things like that, you know, very often. And something interesting that I found out while I was doing more in-depth research is that the ancient Celts believed that the soul was located in the head. So way back when Celts would fight, they would often take, or either they would take the heads or their enemies would take the heads of the Celts as a sort of like kind of like final like screw you to them, as like, I got your soul. So yeah, it's pretty crazy. And I haven't found anything in my research that connects the Doolahan with the soul being in the head. But, I mean, it kind of makes sense with everything that's been laid out before us. So the idea of, that's why specifically when he goes to collect Jack's soul, he puts his finger on Jack's forehead.
Oh.
And that's him drawing out Jack's soul. And, yeah, that's kind of...
Yeah.
That's kind of where that came from.
That scene is like, so I think about that scene like twice a week. It's pretty fucking terrifying.
It's kind of terrifying, yeah. Because the idea of like running away from something and there being absolutely nothing to hold it back. And you can try. Like, you throw big, heavy wooden doors in front of it. You put a table in front of it, but that's nothing.
And Murphy is like, the whole time she's kind of like, I don't even know how to stop this thing. And all it takes is a fucking metal coin. Mm-hmm. gold coin specifically. And like, it's just like so funny because, you know, she does have a lot of knowledge about these things. But when it comes to the Doolahan, she's like, I have to step back. I don't know. We could all just die. And we'd have to accept that because I don't know what to do.
I think it's really interesting that, like, I've been thinking about this a lot since I re-listened to the episode for this episode. I think this is, we talked a lot as a writer's room about like the general feeling for the show that we want to purvey. And like, I know horror is the top one for everything. I think this was the episode in the first run where we finally got a scary Murphy episode. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a lot of suspense and action and everything in the first three, but this is when we were like, oh shit, this is terrifying. And I think a lot of that has to do with Drew and writing, that scene in particular, and it has a lot to do with Dennis's work with crafting the soundscape for the episode. Mm-hmm. Just hearing that bone whip, fucking, I was in the shower listening to it before I got here, and hearing the bone whip, I was like, oh my god, I got like goosebumps while hot water was running over me. And just like, that is just such good craftsmanship from just like all around.
Mm. And like when he used the organ for like the music, like because it was in a church, I was like, oh my god, that's genius. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I just want to know what was running through your mind while you were writing that scene. Did you have any inspiration while you were like putting it down on paper, what was the ending, the overall goal with introducing the Doulahan sonically in the episode?
Well, one thing that I wanted to do for that scene in particular is I wanted it to be, like, I wanted it to feel like they were trapped. To me personally, there is nothing more horrifying than when you do everything you possibly can to either escape or to hold something off. And no matter what you do, no matter what you throw in front of them, no matter how you can escape, doesn't matter, you're trapped. And that's really what I wanted to do with that, is that, oh, he got through the barricade. What do we do now? I guess we can try and fight him. And then, Elliot, he kind of tries, but he gets taken down in one whip crack. But, that's really what I wanted to do is, because like you said, this is kind of like a sort of like horror-esque episode, which, fun fact, I did not sit down and write, I'm going to write a horror episode. I did not. I was just like, let's just type out things that I have in my head and see what comes of it.
So what we're hearing is you need therapy.
I go to therapy. Oh, go to therapy, perfect, kids. Perfect. Therapy is wonderful. But yeah, with that scene, I really wanted to have a feeling of no matter what they can do, they should feel trapped. And I also wanted, because I know that we talked as a writer's room about it, I wanted the Doulahan himself to be an entity of death. Kind of how most folks view a Grim Reaper, for example, the one who collects the souls and ferries them to the other side. I wanted the Doulahan to be that, like at least a version of that. And, I thought, why not make it a little scary?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, God, no, because there's just so much. but it is true, because I think that was one of the things that I guess ends up becoming a misconception within the episode, is that, Murphy is of the understanding that this thing is going to kill us because it wants to. But in the end, it's just warning you to not do something, to not go into the woods.
Yeah.
And all that. So, and also it has one of my favorite Murphy and Elliot moments where she's patching up his hand and they actually have a conversation together. And Murphy kind of opens up a little bit and is like, I almost lost Jack and it's my fault. And I don't know, that was just really sweet the way you wrote that. So
thank you. Yeah. I kind of pulled that from stuff that I learned myself. In that, while I was writing that, I was sort of going through, in my own personal life, just being like, you don't have to know everything. And then I was like, Elliot knows this. He's a well-versed man. Murphy doesn't know this. I'm going to make it so Elliot tells her this, because it's true. You don't need to be expected to know absolutely everything, even something you're an expert in. You don't need to be, you don't have to know everything. You always keep learning. That's what Nana says.
Yeah,
like the learning never stops. And I kind of wanted to put that forth as a lesson for Murphy to learn, as well as, anyone watching to learn, or listening, I should say. But yeah.
Kind of going back to the point that you made about how, we start to see these things with the Doulahan, for example, and other cryptids that are mentioned in the series, just how they're just doing their thing pretty much. And basically, I think by this episode we kind of learn, okay, so the Doulahan is scary, but I think really just keeping order, if that makes sense, of all things. And I think that's something that I just love about Murphy in general, and what we all have created collectively as a writer's room. That's something that I love, especially in this episode, because I think we really, really, really see it as the scary thing isn't as scary as it made out to be, but it is very scary. Mm-hmm. It is still very scary. Soren, again, I'm going to praise him again, because listening to it just again, I cannot. I remember when I first listened to the episode. A little insight. So the other writers don't hear kind of the editing process of the episode besides the other writer, which is so cool, actually, I think. So I had no idea what the Doulahan final, I wasn't even there for when Soren recorded his stuff for the Doulahan. So I was driving to work.
And that's when I was listening to episode 4. And I remember just chills and like running down my spine as I was sitting there at a stoplight. I was like, what is going on?
It's funny you say that. A listener made me aware at one point that he was falling asleep while listening to episode 4. And then like the Doulahan's voice woke him up and he was like, I'm going to turn that off for now and listen to it in the morning.
It's like, we're going to put a pin on this for later.
Yeah. A friend of mine was listening to it. People listen to this while they're driving, which is like really funny. And like, obviously when you listen to podcasts, you're like doing things. But it seems like driving is a common activity. So another driving story is that my good friend from home, she was listening to it. She goes, yeah, I was scared shitless when I heard that. I had to like pump the brakes. I was like, oh my God. It was like a pure jump scare.
Well done, Soren.
Well done, Soren.
Well done, Soren. I kind of have a fun question for you. I was thinking of more fun things just because you also voice Elliot. And, you know, we do go back and we visit basically where he grew up, and we really learn why Elliot is Elliot, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And he says in the episode, I remember he's talking about how, oh, I can't stay here forever. Do you mm-hmm. think that Elliot would secretly retire there eventually?
I think Elliot doesn't know. I think he would, like, in his later years in life, like, maybe, like, he would, like, when he's retired from the force, when he's seen things, maybe he... I do like this idea where he just goes home and he just gardens. Like, he just has a garden and he's just, like, he plants his flowers, he tends to his lawn, like, he makes sure everything looks neat and proper.
So he's a hobbit, yeah.
Yes. The man is 33 years old and he smokes a pipe. He's a hobbit.
So that's why Murphy called Elliot to take care of Jack's plants when they went to Romania. Because he's got
I didn't even put that together. I like that.
Let's go.
Actually, that's funny because Elliot mentions his dad has a green thumb.
That's so funny.
Oh, that's so good. Derek.
I'm so smart.
I like how we're making subconscious connections right now to like everything going on.
That's mm-hmm. like, so that's such an interesting question because it's like, where do the characters go? Like after, like, where do we see them, you know, towards the, not like the end of their life per se, but like
after the end of the after story.
The end of the story. And that's so sweet. But that's like, so Elliot gives me the impression he likes taking care of things. Mm. So
very much so. Like he likes taking care of things, but only when things need to be taken care of.
If it ain't broke.
Exactly. And not only if it ain't broke, but like if someone is about to try something, he will stand at the ready waiting to help them, but he will let them kind of stumble first to kind of learn, but he will be there to catch them. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like he won't let them fall, but he'll let them stumble.
Yes.
Yeah. That's kind of how I see Elliot. He's a caregiver, but he's like a, let them try first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shifting into another aspect of the character psychology, we are introduced to quite a member, many members of his family, including four rather unique aunties. And I know that you've said before that they are true to life in some ways,
yes,
based on your own family. And I'd kind of like to delve a little deeper in to the inspiration for those characters.
Yeah, so the auntie, Elliot's aunties are inspired by my four real life aunties on my mom's side. They know who they are. When I say that, I mean they know which of Elliot's aunties they are.
Are they fans of the show? Do they listen?
Yes, they do.
Hi, so, Drew's aunts.
Any notes you have, just send them to Drew.
Go for it. Like, I told one of my aunts, I was like, this is you. And she was like, I've always loved that name. Aunt Maeve. She's like, I've always loved the name Aunt Maeve. So
first name Aunt, last name Maeve.
Last name Maeve, exactly. But I love my family to death. And my aunties have always been, you know, if not immediately around, they've been within, you know, a phone call away, like pretty much all my life. And so they're a pretty big deal to me. So I was like, you know what? I think Elliot's pretty close with his aunties. He's close with his parents. He's close with his aunties. And he's close with his Nana. Hi, Graham.
Hi, Graham.
Hi, Graham.
If you have any notes, send them to Drew.
If you have any notes, send them my way. So yeah, it was fun to take real life inspiration because we don't get a ton from the aunties, but like in those few lines, I kind of like wrote real life. Like, what is the thing Elliot says? He's like, if you drink with them, they get funnier. If you don't drink with them, they get louder. That is a real life family quote that has run in my family for the past several years.
Obviously, Nana is your Graham, you said, right?
Yeah, kind of a mixture of both my grandparents on my mom's side. Yeah.
Was there any other influence that you kind of incorporated into Nana besides your own family? I'm curious.
Yeah, well, I always loved the storyteller as a character. Like, I always thought that was super fun. And you know, the older you are, the more stories you have. And the more stories you have, the more engaged, you know, presumably you can have people. So I always liked the idea of someone who was like, yes, come sit. Let me tell you a story. Like the grandpa in The Princess Bride, for example, when he like reads the book and the kid starts out like, I'm not really into this. And then like, as he keeps reading and reading and reading, he's just like, what's next? What happens? The elder storyteller was definitely like a trope inspiration that I had for this character.
That makes so much sense as to who you are as a person, too.
We're uncovering a lot of
Drew.
Yeah. Deep dive into Drew's psyche.
These people have known me for at least a good 7 years, and they're finding things out about me on air.
Yeah, on air.
Well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been a lot of fun writing this episode and delving more into this. And going back like 20 pages, when I was talking about the Dullahan being sort of like an embodiment of death, I didn't realize this until after I really kind of delved into it, is that the Festival of Cromdu, which is the festival that Cool celebrates, Cromdu was like a Celtic god, like an ancient Celtic god of death. The festival itself is like kind of like, it's kind of like a early sprinkling of like, hey, this might be what the cryptid is that we find out about later. But it's also like the god is a god of death, but the festival itself is to celebrate life. Because, you know, most people in the town are like, it'll happen someday. Might as well have a good time while we're here. And to have that juxtaposed next to a horrifying embodiment of death was very fun to just a fun thing to compare to.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Do we have any further questions for Drew in this interrogation?
Excuse me? God, can we get the heat lamp off already?
Potato.
Cool. No, we're good.
Alrighty. Did you say that because this episode's in Ireland?
My episode's also in Ireland.
I know.
Which is a great segue.
Thank God.
To the fact that I did write, yes, so these are questions that are kind of for both of you, because both of these episodes are in Ireland, and we kind of go from like one very small part to a rather big part of it, which is Dublin. It's like a major, like pretty major city.
Yes.
And like all this stuff. So we go from like this little village and we're in the car, and you know, it just kind of works out really nicely. So we have two episodes in Ireland, which is awesome. And I, you know, both of them have like a little bit of Gaelic, and that was fun because it was fun to watch the cast like trip over the language, and myself included. I still don't know how to pronounce half these stuff. You put it in front of me, I'm like, what? So my question is, what was that experience like for the both of you, like getting to know the language a little bit and like incorporating it into these episodes?
Basically, in my episode, I decided to use the Celtic name for fairies, which is she. It was very interesting getting to know the language a little bit. It was a lot of research, to be honest, of just making sure that you did your pronunciations right. I actually did go to Ireland, funny enough, while we were recording my episode. And also, I think we were still recording episode 4, something like that.
It's like the end of episode 4. Yeah. Episode 5. Yeah.
So when I went there, you know, I was surrounded by a lot of Irish, and that people also call Gaelic Irish. So when I was there, when I went to the Cliffs of Moher, I remember sitting there and like listening to some of the things, and I'm like, oh my God, like, I don't know. It was just so interesting to kind of hear the things that we were working on, that kind of in the actual element of the country. But that was pretty much it for me, to be honest. I didn't have as much, I think, as Drew when it came to that.
Well, I a lot of the like Gaelic language that I had put into the episode is stuff that I already knew, because I've been a fan of like Irish mythology for God, like high school, which
was going to say since you were a wee baby.
So I already knew that the phonetic pronunciation doesn't really apply to the Gaelic language, which is, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not knocking that because I think it's awesome. Samhain, cool. I can't remember anything else off the top of my head, but Cromdu, yes.
Although that one I would say is like pretty close to like
do,
what it
do is spelled D-U-B-H, but
never
like
fucking mind.
but Crom is still spelled C-R-O-M. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
But it was fun. It was a good time.
Cool. And so I guess that kind of like goes into my next question, which is like, both of you explored like Irish traditions and Irish folktales, and just like the culture, I guess. Like, what was your research process for that? Was it all like personal experience, or was it just because I know you two are very, very Irish? was it personal experience, or did you do like extra research just to like make sure you were being super accurate?
There is so much fairy lore, as you learn. Like, I think Drew and I, we talked a tiny bit about both of our lores, just because I took some inspiration from Celtic lore and then some from D&D lore of the fairy realm, like the Feywild and things like that. But going to kind of like, Drew, I know you did more of like the fairy courts, Scottish lore with some of it. I had to do extra work in terms of that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So originally for my episode, there was the aspect of maybe exploring changelings. And then kind of when I dived a little bit more into changelings, I decided definitely not going to do changelings. So as I did my research on that, I really wanted to highlight the effect of like they exist and kind of going into how they do coincide with the human world, if that makes sense. And the Dullahan, obviously, is also a fairy. Mm-hmm. So I had to do extra research in that aspect when picking out what specific lore I kind of wanted to go with.
Mm-hmm. For most of my research, I asked my grandma.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Her parents were like fresh off the boat immigrants from Ireland. But a lot of like the family sitting around the table having drinks, having music play, talking about what's been going on. That is... We did that all the time at my grandparents' house when I was a little toddler. So I was just like... Just writing it, I like... Because in my head, what the O'Donnell homestead looks like is like my grandparents' house. Like, I pulled a lot from family for this episode, y'all. For like the actual festival itself, I did a little bit of research. I did that while researching Cromdu himself. I distinctly remember there was this one video. I have no idea what the name of it is or who it was, but I know it's an older gentleman. He is reading stories about and research from a big book about Cromdu and the festival. That's how he says it. He's like, Cromdu. And that's where I pulled a lot of like the festival lore from.
So we're going into episode 5. There was Music in Her Eyes by Annie B. Which also a lot of stuff happens in this as well. And, you know, we kind of start a little, we go right into it. And something that I noticed on listening through it again was that we start to see Elliot cracking a little bit, and kind of like coming to terms with the fact that, like, you know, Jack could die and there's a lot of like stress, but they're going to this festival. So at first he kind of just like is in denial a little bit, words, So my question, Annie, for you is, what was it like starting to write that side of Elliot and like kind of put him in that place?
Oh, man. It's very interesting for me because I think I wrote the first rendition of Elliot, which was like very wild to think about way back when, episode two. So then coming full circle, I guess, to episode five, where we do see him crack a little bit. It is rather emotional for me just because we know Elliot as this fun, loving, caring partner of Jack's for so long. And he does become kind of in this mismatched, like, friend group that they now have formed, traveling companions. Just seeing him sort of solemnly to himself kind of worry about losing Jack forever. I think we really see kind of his friendship with Jack and how much he means to him. And just the reality of the situation, it was very grounding, I guess, to kind of be able to write that transition for Elliot that we do see in episode five and some of episode six as well, which obviously we'll get to that at some point. But
spoilers.
No, that's so that is so interesting because that's true. You did write Elliot first because of episode two. That was like his. Supposed to be, he wasn't supposed to be in episode one, and then he ended up in episode two. So we are introduced to two new characters in this episode, with Billy, who is Murphy's pal from training and has expert knowledge of fairies and the fairy realm and everything, and then Adair, the bard, the musician. Also voiced by Soren.
Hey, he's back, baby!
Range, right? I wrote fairy wrangler, but that's not at all what he does.
That's not it.
That's not it at all.
I don't know if I can say what he would be.
Yeah, but something I noticed is that he is just as mischievous as the fairies, and he is like, you know, like, fiddle-dee-dee, I'm gonna throw you into a different realm of different plane of reality and so long.
Cause chaos.
Somehow a bard and a rogue at the same time.
Hey. He multi-class.
So my question, when writing both of these characters, like, what was your process like? And did you have fun, like, more fun writing one of them versus writing the other?
Oh, that's hard because I, Alex knows this, and I don't shut up about this, like, with anyone in the writer's room about my favorite thing. I'm going to say it again. I'm, like, my favorite thing about writing actually is just characters and character development and getting to see people's stories and see, like, how complex people's emotions can be. It's, like, one of my favorite things, so it's really hard to pick a favorite character, but we're going to put a pin on that.
Character writing is really solid. The prep work that you do for them,
solid. I think of them not as my children, but just, like, various parts of my brains in different alternate realities bit. So I guess for the first half of the question, as to my writing process, I'm going to start with Adair first. Mm-hmm. So Adair, I kind of took loosely from Dandelion from The Witcher, like a little bit of inspiration from that. And then also just like, you know, not to give too much away about Adair. He did grow up with fairies. So his whole demeanor, the way he is because this is what he's used to. This is like who he is. You know, is he inherently good? Is he inherently evil? He's kind of neutral. I think it's very interesting playing on a character that isn't one way fully or one way the other. Very just on the borderline of like, are you doing this for the right reasons? Are you trying to do this for your own self? So, yeah, going in to write him was very, very fun. I will say writing him was fun. Coming up with the riddles, I did actually put some thinking to the riddles. That was so fun. And I had such a clear image of Adair in my head of what I want him to look like, how I want his persona to be. So that was just great. And then kind of going into Billy, I really wanted to show a contrast to Murphy a little bit of somebody else from Parliament. But as revealed in the episode, find out she's from the European section that has now changed her name to Court of the Veiled. Spooky,
mysterious.
Rebrand. And I just kind of wanted to show a little bit of the not full opposite of Murphy, because I do think Murphy is fun and sarcastic and wonderful. I love Murphy so much. But Billy is much more on the more loose side of things, where she's very much like, ah, I got this. And she's the only one to take a mission to go out to fairies, which is a very dangerous mission that nobody else wanted to go on. But she just loves them so much. So I really wanted to highlight that contrast and also the layers that are kind of in Billy that are there, where it was just fun to write her as a character because I got to use a lot more loosey-goose language, if that makes sense. And she just tried so, like, writing the scene of when Murphy, not Murphy, when Jack is accusing Billy, kind of being untruthful and things like that. That was just a little heart-wrenching for me at points. So yeah. And who's more fun? That's really difficult because they're both so fun in their own unique way.
I feel like they both are cut from the same chaos cloth.
That's the thing.
You know, yeah.
I think if we're thinking in terms of, I'm going to bring it back to D&D. There's a lot of D&D here. We love D&D here. I'm going to bring it back to, like, chaotic good Billy, and then maybe chaotic neutral is like a dare. So, like, I don't know. Honestly, they're both so fun in their own way, but I guess if I have to choose...
you don't have to choose.
I'm not gonna.
Which of your children is your favorite?
No, you never. I feel like that's like a question you ask a writer. I feel like they would freeze because I feel like that's such a hard question to ask. Is who's your favorite?
Oh, hang on, I got a better one. Which of your children is your least favorite?
I'm pretty sure
that I could write.
I have had characters looking back on it. I'm like, I fucking hate writing this character.
Yeah, there's been characters I have despised writing. To be honest,
not even in Murphy, and like just like, you know, general, and it has nothing to do with who they are as people. It's just like I don't have fun writing for this character.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Maybe there's some limitations, which was so nice also about Murphy, is we do have a lot of freedom with the characters that we do introduce and our writing process, to be honest. There are still some things, of course, for the sake of Murphy that we do follow, but beyond that, we do have a lot of fun writing these characters.
And that really shows throughout your writing too, where it's like I can tell she like absolutely has the most fun when she's doing this. Episode 5, there's like it's so trippy in a way, because I feel like when we hear the fairies for the first time, and they're just like these like disembodied voices, and it's like, what the fuck? I was listening to it again today. I listened to both episodes again today as like a true refresher, and I was like doing like I was like cleaning or whatever, and then I just like heard the echoey voice. Like, what the fuck?
No, yeah. And a fun thing about the fairies is, so the first I think two or three drafts that I did, I think we had like two or three drafts, episode 5, there were no fairies in there. And then I felt like something was missing from the episode for the final draft. And I'm like, you know what? What if I just throw in some of the fairies and we get to hear them and listen to them a bit? Because I'm like, we don't know a dare is a dare, like all this other stuff. I'm like, And then just adding them in and then seeing the final product, like when Dennis sent me the first edit of the fairies, I lost my mind. Totally lost. Oh, God. It was just, oh, man. Yeah, no. Fun things that happened last minute that stick. So, yeah.
Did you have any sort of, like, inspiration in mind when you were creating both Billy and Adair? Or was, like, I know you said Adair was kind of, like, based a little bit on Dandelion from The Witcher, but was there anything else specific? Was it, like, if we're making an Adair soup, we'll throw in a base of Dandelion, and we'll throw in a sprinkle of this and a pinch of
this. For sure. I don't remember his name fully. But when I do think of Adair, and I was thinking back to this character, if anyone has ever played the game Skyrim,
Skyrim.
There is somebody that you meet in the game in a certain quest, and you have to have a feast with him. I wish I knew his name. I just saw his name pop up. He's the one who's like, oh, and here, listener, and blah, blah, blah. He's like this bard. I believe it's with the Assassins portion of the game, the Dark Brotherhood. I'm not 100% sure, but his character specifically came to mind as well when I was kind of making an Adair soup. Which is very funny because Dandelion is so good, and that character is inherently don't want to spoil the game for you, but he's a little bit the opposite of good. So it really does make sugar and spice and everything nice. Wait, that does spoil it. What am
Gee,
I saying?
What's the opposite of good?
Listen, Skyrim is 10 years old. All right. But that was another thing. For Billy, it's kind of hard because I had a lot of female characters that I've seen in mind. Very funny enough, Black Widow came to mind a little bit for Billy, which I know.
The red hair, yeah.
Oh, with the red hair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, she came to mind a lot. But honestly, Billy was more so from Murphy, if that, I don't know if that makes sense.
It's like
inspiration from Murphy. Interesting.
Like the character Murphy. Yeah, no, to be honest, that was her. And also just like Billy in itself, I don't know. It's almost, like I said, you take bits of your brain into these characters. And for me, Billy's kind of the character that I would love to be like this. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. If I was a parliament agent, I would want to be this, like, kind of she's chaotic. A bit of a chaotic, like, loose cannon, but she's so good at her job. So, mm-hmm. So yeah.
She's the personality hire.
She is the personality hire. Except she does do well.
She does do well,
she
yeah.
does do well. She gets great performance reviews.
Mm-hmm. But it is true. Like, she is kind of like, I totally see that influence of Murphy and Billy. And, like, you know, they were kind of like, as mentioned in the episode, like, they were friends back in the day. So, you know, when you're friends with people, they like, you rub off on each other.
I was thinking a lot about the scene at the bar where they're all drunk. And I know for me personally, it's really hard to write drunk dialogue. Some actor was saying, like, when you're playing drunk, you're not trying to be drunk. You're trying to be sober. I just want to know what was going through your brain when you were putting that down on paper. What was the vision for that scene for you?
The process of me writing characters that are drunk, actually, funny enough, in the script, when I was first writing it, I had put, like, music stuff in there. And I put in, like the, you know, merry-go-round? So they go, and then they, have you ever seen the seats where they speed up and the person's, like, really dizzy and the music just kind of gets mm-hmm. faster and faster and faster and faster?
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of what I envisioned as they were getting drunk, which kind of helped put me in the mindset. I always listen to certain kinds of music when I am writing also. Depending on the scene or what's going on. So I was listening to a lot of, like, kind of circusy music when writing that.
Incredible.
So, yeah. And also just, I always have such a vivid image, even though this is an audio drama, I always have such a vivid image of being in a place, like being in a scene. And I have to really put myself there and see the room, see what's going on. Like, the way I picture characters is from the corner of their eye, corner of an outsider's eye looking in on the characters you're writing. So I envision myself kind of sitting there watching these drunk people just kind of going ham as, like, tourists, you know what I mean? Like, in the middle of this bar. So that's kind of my process for it, was I didn't look at a perspective of, like, oh, this character's drunk, I'm writing drunk. I was looking at more like a bystander looking in on somebody who's drunk.
That's the same for any scene in the script, I'm sure. It's like, that's your general.
Yeah, bystander. Somebody was observing from, like, wherever, seeing what's going on. So
I wanna attach a little bit more to, you said, music. And I know that music is a very, very key part of this episode specifically. Dennis did a beautiful job composing. Mm-hmm. All of the music, but especially for this episode. I know that it was a challenge for you to write around the music, especially because we haven't heard it while we were writing it. Mm-hmm. What was your process working with Dennis on that like, and mm-hmm. how did that affect the drafts as they went forward?
That's a good question. So originally in the drafts, like, I put in ideas for what I have in music, just kind of like, oh, this music's going to be a little bit more like somber and stuff in these points. And then him and I kind of worked together to see, like, all right, we're gonna do this. And he would send me samples, or he would send me songs that he was considering using in different scenes. The thing we worked the most on was the fiddle. that was the biggest thing, because we wanted to, I really wanted to make sure it was that kind of like mischievous, very luring in the distance. And I think he did an excellent job with the fiddle, especially certain parts where I put that the fiddle's like slowing down, droning music, things like that. So
like a pendulum almost.
Right? Yeah. A bit. That's kind of what I envisioned. And he worked with me a lot on that, especially during the scene when they're all in the crowd and they notice that one person's in the trance and everyone just kind of the fiddle starts getting distorted as they pay more attention to this person in the trance. Mm-hmm. So, it was a lot of going back and forth. There were things that originally I put that we kind of worked out that were like, no, we're not going to do that. And, you know, kind of trusting each other as a writer and a sound designer. I think for everyone's episodes, everyone could attest that that's something that Dennis is fantastic at. Mm-hmm. He will literally send you clips. He will send you everything. Like, is there anything I need to do? And, like, the collaboration is fantastic in that aspect.
I love getting notes from Dennis.
Me too.
It's awesome.
So I'm glad Derek brought up the whole music aspect of it, because it really is like it's like its own character in the show. And so it's really funny because we know that we're writing for audio, but the fact that you are so visual, and it, again, that also shows in like the way that you like describe the surroundings and all of that. I think it is really important that we do that. So this way the listener is fully immersed.
It's a great benefit.
Oh yeah, totally. Mm. And yeah, so a quick shout out to our fiddle player, which is Noah Green.
Hell yeah, Noah.
Typically we do have a string player who plays all of our like the orchestral pieces. Her name is Liz Lister.
She's amazing. She's incredible. Yeah. I can't.
He told me that he wanted the sound of the fiddle to be different, so he asked he didn't ask Liz to do it. He asked Noah, who's a friend from grad school. And I think it was super successful because, yeah, it is kind of like it's completely separate from, you know, the score itself. Like, even though it is part of it, but it's diegetic. It's diegetic music. So, because the audience is hearing it and the characters are hearing it, and it's like, it's just, it is really, really cool. And I love listening to the fiddle piece that we wrote, that Dennis wrote for that Dennis wrote for episode 5. And speaking of music, if you're interested in hearing any of these tracks, the soundtrack is available and you can listen to it on Spotify, which is what I do every now and again. I will put on the track "The One Who Must Play," and it's that fiddle metal melody, and I'm like, oh my god, yeah,
spooky rooky.
Annie, in this episode, there's a lot mentioned, as we've talked about at length, about like the she folklore and fairy realms and et cetera, et cetera. Is there some piece of folklore that you didn't end up using that you wanted to use?
Ooh, that is such a good question. Well, the one thing I dabbled in, I wouldn't say a piece of folklore, but I think an aspect of the folklore that I incorporated into that episode was accessing the fairy realm. I know that was an idea we had talked about, I think, in the writer's room in maybe the first session, or maybe I mentioned it quickly, or maybe it was a thought through my brain. But I was debating whether or not we wanted to see that world, and if we wanted to get a taste for what it is.
Right.
But I had decided not to. Based on the research, what I had looked up in terms of the fairy realm, a lot of accounts of old, you know, stories of if somebody was lured into the fairy realm, they come back changed completely different. They're a different person. They're never the same again after being there, because it's so horrifying, some of the things that they see, because they can't understand it. So I played on that aspect of the unknown being we don't know how it looks. We only know how it sounds, actually, to be honest, not even just because of it being an audio drama, but we just only know based on what Murphy says at the end what it could possibly look like from an outsider perspective. Oh, yeah. So I kind of wanted to leave it there. There's some lore that I did use to kind of go along with Adair and who Adair is, that didn't make it into that episode, but I did use some other aspects, different she's and kings and queens and things like that. But that I will kind of keep a little bit on a tight bow on for right
Stay
now.
Tuned.
So,
yeah. Oh, that was a cool question.
That was a cool question. Thank you.
So something that I noticed, I actually forgot to mention, but Billy is voiced by Angela Strauman.
Angie!
Love her.
And she does a fantastic job. Which and something else I noticed is that she voices two Irish characters back to back, which I thought was like, and she does different styles for both
she
of us.
She does indeed.
And when we were in the booth, she told me that, and I loved her for this, she told me that she was channeling the mom from Derry Girls.
Yeah.
For Alice. And it was so soft. And I was like, oh my God, yes, thank you.
Absolutely.
Incredible.
And she just does a fantastic job with Billy. Like, I was listening to it and I was like, I could
So awesome. You
know. Oh, she's amazing. Yeah. As you can tell, we love our cast around here. the last thought that I had is something that I noticed. At the end of episode 4, Murphy kind of talks about like how she's like, I can't wait to go home. And Murphy, to me, always struck me as a person who like didn't really have like a set home. But now she's kind of considering like Elliot and Jack her family. Mm. And I think she mentions that in episode 4 about like, oh, it felt like we were a little family, like doing the dishes mm-hmm. together. And I just think that's like really special because it kind of like shows like her growth and everything.
Yeah.
And that's just like so fantastic. Yeah. Okay. So now my question.
No, that is such a true statement.
Yeah. Now my question for both of you, because I realized I did write this down when I was doing my questions and I put it for both of you. So what was the most exciting part of the process, for writing both of these episodes?
Well, how can you narrow it down? Like, there's a lot of very interesting stuff that goes into it. Like the original, like we didn't have storyboards, but like the original, like outlining was so much fun. Honestly, I think the most exciting part of the process for me personally was hearing everyone else say words that I wrote. Like yeah. That was so much fun. Because when as a writer, when you write things down, you have an idea of how they're said in your head. When an actor takes it and reads it a completely different way, that is awesome and it's exciting mm-hmm. and it's so cool. And like, I definitely, when other people were here, when the cast was reading it for the first time, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Because also, this is, I don't know if we've mentioned before, episode 4 was the first script I ever wrote that went all the way to production.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. That's my answer. Final answer, Alex.
Hell yeah.
I have to also agree with Drew. Honestly, it is so magical. It is so magical when, oh God, even for episode 2, when I first heard, like, Antone play as Peter and things like that. Just sat there and was like, oh my God, sorry. It's like such an incredible process. And I remember coming here, I think I was able to come for a little bit. Like I said, I was in Ireland during episode 5 recording, but I was able to come in for a little bit of Angie doing Billy, and that was incredible because I love her character so deeply much. So to be able to hear the voice to Billy was just, oh God, it was so amazing. That's been such a wild part of this process is when we get to sit here because the writers are invited to come and listen mm-hmm. to the recordings. And, you know, we'll talk with Alex, who's a lovely, lovely director. She's very big on, like, writer collaboration. So if the writers have something that they, you know, would like to input in the directing process, we all kind of collaborate a little bit in that. So, that's just such a magical experience. I don't know. It's just like, oh my God, you're bringing to life this person with so much emotion and feelings and depth and intricacy. And I can't wait to see how it builds and it unfolds kind of going forward with everyone just in general. So yeah.
Real quick also, while we're shouting out our amazing cast, I got to give a quick shout out to Minana, to Miss Allison O'Brien.
We love Allison.
We love Allison.
She was phenomenal.
She's such a sweetie.
She's fantastic.
Is it all right if I jump in on that question? I know it was for Annie and Drew.
Yeah, absolutely.
Please, yes.
I unfortunately was not really able to get much of a chance to see the recording process just because of how my schedule worked out. I will be remedying that for the next season for sure. I simply must. But I think there's also a lot of emotional relief that comes from finishing the last draft and like submitting it and having it be completely done. And then once the episode is out, just like having a physical, tangible thing that you have created that people can listen to, that you can say, I did that. I wrote that. That is my episode of something. And it makes you feel like really, really proud. And of course, hearing it for the first time, like you guys said, is just phenomenal. But just like there's something about being able to finish the work and knowing what's going to come of it and what's going to lead to it. That just makes you feel really good as a part of a writer's room too.
Yeah.
Aww. I'm getting emotional now because I could go on about this. That's the issue, is like this stuff.
I'm going to save the tears for the episode 6.
Yeah. You know what? I'll save my thought for then.
What handsome gentleman wrote that episode? I wonder.
Nobody we know.
So that is a fantastic way to, I guess, begin the closing. Annie, Drew, thank you both so much for your insights and everything. I'm so excited to hear your work for next season, too. The next episode of Merlin's Monsters, we will be diving into episode 6, the finale, and we are dedicating an entire episode to it because there's so much that we could talk about that fitting it into this one would have just made it like 2 hours long.
It's a doozy of an episode, for sure.
So much happens. Other content will come your way to satiate your Murphy needs until next season premieres. So keep an eye out for that. There's so much more to come. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to it, to keep up with the show. And we will be seeing you soon. Does anybody else have any closing thoughts?
Stay curious.
Yes.
But not too curious.
No. Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and we will see you soon.
Bye.